military strike.
The U.S. ends up backing down, but the whole thing establishes Syria as a great powers dispute, with Russia backing Assad and the U.S. opposing him. Just weeks later, the first American CIA training and arms reached Syrian rebels. The U.S. is now a participant in the war. In February 2014, something happens that transforms the war. An Al-Qaeda affiliate, based mostly in Iraq, breaks away from the group over internal disagreements. The group calls itself the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, or ISIS, and it becomes Al-Qaeda's enemy. ISIS mostly fights not Assad, but other rebels and Kurds, carving out a mini-state it calls its caliphate. That summer, it marches across Iraq, seizing territory and galvanizing the world against it. In September, 1 year after...
Okay, so you can see our fixation with the Islamic State, right, is an offshoot of the Syrian conflict. We've been focused on that, and this Syrian thing has gone on kind of on a parallel track as we got after, because the Islamic State encroached on what we had thought we had fought for, and that was Iraq. So when it compromised Iraq, right, you saw the United States get back involved in it.
After U.S. almost bombed Assad, it begins bombing ISIS.
We're moving ahead with our campaign of airstrikes against these terrorists, and we're prepared to take action against ISIL in Syria as well.
That summer, in July, the Pentagon launches its own program to train Syrian rebels, but will only train those who will fight ISIS, not Assad. The program fizzles, showing that America now opposes ISIS more than Assad, but that there's also no like-minded Syrian proxy forces on the ground in Syria. In August, Turkey starts bombing Kurdish groups in Iraq and in Turkey, even as these Kurdish groups are fighting ISIS in Syria. But Turkey doesn't bomb ISIS. This gets to one of the big problems in this conflict. The U.S. sees ISIS as its main enemy, but the U.S.'s allies, like Turkey and a lot of Middle Eastern states, have other priorities. This makes for a lot of unclear and confusing alliances. The next month, in September, Russia intervenes on behalf of Assad, sending a few dozen military aircraft to a long-held Russian base in the country. Russia says it's there to bomb ISIS, but in fact only ends up bombing anti-Assad rebels, including some backed by the U.S. The next year, Donald Trump wins the White House, vowing to stay out of Syria and signaling that Assad should be able to stay in power. At the end of 2016, Assad, helped by Russian air power and Iranian-sponsored militias, retakes the Syrian city of Aleppo, knocking the rebels out of their last remaining urban stronghold. Then, in spring 2017, Assad once again uses chemical weapons against his people, killing 85, including 20 children. Back in the U.S., Trump says his attitude towards Syria and Assad has, quote, changed very much due to the attacks. He vows to respond, and within just a few days, the White House launches dozens of Tomahawk missiles that strike an airbase in Syria. This is the first time the United States has directly attacked the Assad regime, and this adds yet another crisscrossing complication to the already multidimensional civil war. So as it stands now, Syria is in ruins. Even as Assad recaptures land, the rebellion perseveres, and with outside countries fueling each of the groups, it's clear that there's still no end in sight.
All right. So that's just kind of a little primer in terms of what's going on there today. Now I want to take us closer. I want to take us into this week and play a couple pieces of audio. So I got an email. Hey Mac, what is an Alawite? All right. Alawis, right, which is an Alawite, also rendered as Alawites, are a syncretic sect of the Twelver branch of Shia Islam, primarily centered in Syria. They revere Ali, considered the first imam of the Twelver school, which is the Shiite form of Islam. And here's another little thing. The difference between Alawites and Sunnis in Syria have sharpened dangerously since the beginning of the 2011 uprising. The reason for the tension is primarily political rather than religious. Top positions in Assad's army are held by Alawite officers, while most of the rebels from the Free Syrian Army and other opposition groups come from Syria's Sunni majority. So again, you can almost think of the Alawites in Syria occupy the same position as the Sunnis in Iraq. Although the minority, they are the dominant party in the nation. The all right, so let me play so again, in terms of understanding there, you'll see I'm gonna play one more short clip for you. It might be 4 minutes. And it this was done by the French, so he's a French guy, so you'll have to deal with the accent. But it's very well done. And the French have a historical relationship with Syria. So this is by the French publication Le Monde, which means the world.
Three years of war, 150,000 deaths, 2.5 million refugees, and no solution in sight. The intensity of the Syrian crisis has exceeded all forecasts and is still far from over. How to explain such a situation? How did the popular uprising of spring 2011 become a major bloodbath? To understand the crisis, you have to look at it on three different levels. First, the Syrian conflict is a civil war. On the one hand, the rebels, mostly Sunnis, the biggest community in Syria.
And just so you know, I'll post this. This is probably the best done of the different kind of primers I've seen on Syria. Both the graphics and the explanation, I think, are the best I've seen.
They occupied north, Damascus suburbs, and countrysides in the south. And
so when you see what the Sunnis occupy, Kurds are Sunnis, okay? They occupy the Euphrates Valley. They occupy the north. They occupy the Bekaa Valley and the terrain all the way down around Damascus. And that is the majority of the nation, other than the desert where nobody lives.
In the center of the country. On the other hand, the loyalists, who rely on the Alawite sect, a branch of Shia Islam, of which the Assad clan is part of. They control the big cities, including the capital, and the seafront, mostly populated by Alawites.
Okay, so that seafront, that is the home of the Alawites, and then they've been transplanted to the major cities that sit along the eastern side of Syria. The rest of the nation is Sunni.
The pro-regime forces recently took over the Kalamun Mountain near Lebanon. The insurgents retaliated, invading north of Latakia. Elsewhere, the front line remains more or less stable. But quickly, multiple countries took advantage of this civil war. In Syria.
Okay, so what it does a great job portraying is there's layers of the conflict. There's a Syrian civil war that goes on, largely between a Sunni a majority. It looks like upwards of 80% that is Sunni and the Alawite population that inhabits the coast.
Yeah, became a battlefield by proxy. The first players of this globalization are the Western superpowers supporting the rebels. The United States and big European countries back up the Syrian National Coalition, the main anti-Assad organization. The SNC was born in late 2012 and is admitted as the only representative of the Syrian people by around 100 countries. But Western support, mostly diplomatic, never helped the SNC to become a structure able to replace the Assad regime. Fundings are too low, weapons delivery too slow, and the US have always refused the option of a military intervention, even after the chemical attacks in Damascus in August 2013. On the other side, there are the Assad supporters, China and Russia. They are both members of the UN Security Council, and they both blocked three of its resolutions against the regime. Besides, Moscow constantly supplies the Syrian army. Russia has several interests in this crisis. Economic interests, because the Assad regime is an old client for the Russian military industry. Strategic interests, because the Tartus Harbor is the last Russian access to the Mediterranean Sea.
Okay, the Tartus Harbor, what he meant was Tartus Harbor, is the last Russian military base in the Mediterranean.
And finally,
I can translate French.
Geopolitical interest, because back in 2011, the Kremlin didn't appreciate the NATO intervention in Libya, which was supposed to only protect civilians, but finally ended with the fall of Gaddafi. Today, Vladimir Putin really doesn't want this kind of event to happen again, especially right in his sphere of influence, which Syria is part of. And this is how the anti-Assad uprising became part of a new kind of struggle between East and West.
That's the second layer.
The third stakeholders in the Syrian conflict are the Sunni monarchies of the Persian Gulf. Saudi Arabia, for instance, sees in the Syrian crisis a way to weaken its archenemy, Iran. The Shiite giant is the first ally of Syria in the Middle East. This is why Saudi Arabia and Qatar delivered weapons to rebel squad through Jordan and Turkey. Besides, several Salafi sheikhs settled in Kuwait set up donation systems to help the rebellion. But over time, sponsors from the Gulf began to support increasingly radical rebel groups like Al-Nusra Front or Ahrar al-Sham, which are close to Al-Qaeda. Up north, the Turkish government also played with fire by letting militias of the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant pass through its territory. To face the Sunni forces, Assad can rely on his Shiite allies, the fourth players in the conflict. Iran brings to Damascus money, weapons, and military advisors. There is also the Shiite Lebanese militia, Hezbollah. At the beginning of the conflict, their fighters were just patrolling along the Syrian border. But they ended up fighting directly alongside the Syrian army. It's the same for Iraqi's Shiite militias. At first, they were only supposed to protect the Saida Zainab Mausoleum, and now they are dispatched all over the country, especially in Aleppo.
Aleppo.
And this...
So you can see the different layers. You can see the pretext under which people get involved with, and that is simply where they begin to expand from.
This is how Syria became the core of a new episode in the old conflict between Shiites and Sunnis.
And when you see Shiites and Sunnis, it's not even close, and then they overlay they kind of overlay those populations into the map, right? The Shiite population is predominantly centered in Iran, and then in northern and western Turkey, and I'm sorry, northern and eastern Turkey. The rest of it is all Sunni, to include Syria.
Let's sum up the situation. Civil war, Cold War, Holy War. The Syrian conflict is a mix of local, regional...
Holy war means holy war.
...and international issues. A puzzle that seems, for now, very hard to solve.
It is. All right. I'm not going to have time to do that. So let me... This is from the BBC earlier this week. I thought it was very well done.
Syria and its ally Russia have blamed Israel for a missile attack on a government airbase. The Interfax news agency said Israeli warplanes had carried out the strikes from Lebanese airspace. Monday's attack hit the TS airbase, known as T4, near the city of Homs. Reports say several people have died, some of them Iranian. This follows a suspected chemical attack on a rebel-held area near the Syrian capital Damascus, an attack that has been blamed on the Syrian government. Our correspondent Yolande Nell has been monitoring events from Jerusalem.
Well, the information we have is coming from the Russian Defense Ministry and also from the Syrians, and reports saying that two Israeli F-15 warplanes fired several missiles between 12:30 and 1:00 in the morning GMT at this airbase, which is in the center of Syria. It's the largest military airbase in the country. We understand that some of the missiles struck the western part of the airfield. Now, according to the Syrian Observatory for Human Rights, which monitors events in Syria from the UK, it's saying at least 14 people were killed there, including Iranians. And we do know that at this particular airbase, as well as the Syrians, there are Iranians, also members of the Lebanese armed group Hezbollah, and also, of course, Russians as well. The Russians say that there were no Russian specialists that were injured in this incident. Here, the Israeli military spokesperson is declining to comment, but that is quite typical because we have had dozens of strikes carried out by Israel, we know, inside Syria in recent years, without, in most cases, the Israelis commenting on them.
Now, the US was very quick to say that it was not behind this attack, but do you think that the Pentagon might have known this strike was coming?
Well, certainly even the Syrians at first suspected that it was the US that was behind this airstrike after that warning from President Trump after a suspected chemical weapon attack in Douma, in the rebel-held town there, that President Bashar al-Assad would have a big price to pay. Of course, the US is an extremely important ally of Israel, so we could expect that the Israelis would tell Washington what it was, what they were planning. Also, perhaps the Russians too, because we do know that the Russians have in the past, besides having very good relations with the Israelis in general, they have got involved to try to de-escalate the situation, particularly back in February when actually Israel targeted this very airfield after an Iranian drone was said to have been flown into Israeli airspace. And that was actually one of the most recent dangerous flare-ups in this confrontation. We believe that Moscow got involved to calm the situation at that point.
You use the word de-escalation, Yolande, but that seems a little unlikely now, given also what President Trump has been tweeting about the man he calls Animal Assad, and the fact that his new security advisor, National Security Advisor John Bolton, has just taken up the role today, and he's known for being very hawkish.
And indeed, and Israeli officials also have been coming out urging the US to take action against President Assad if, as seems to have been the case, his forces are found to have carried out this chemical weapons attack. Of course, it's about a year ago that the US fired cruise missiles at a government airbase in retaliation for another suspected chemical attack back in April 2017. So now there is a lot of people looking towards Washington, also towards the French President Emmanuel Macron, who has come out saying that there should be a strong response taken against the Syrian regime in this case. But Israel for itself makes clear that it has what it sees as its national security threats, its own red lines, and they are typically to try to stop any advanced weaponry being passed to Hezbollah, its sworn enemy, and also, of course, it's extremely concerned about Iran trying to establish a permanent military presence inside Syria.
And we've just heard from Russia's Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov, who says the overnight airstrike is a dangerous development. He has also insisted there is no sign of the Syrian government using chemical weapons in Douma. He said the area has been visited by our military specialists and representatives from the Syrian Red Crescent. They found no traces of chlorine or any other chemical substance being used against peaceful civilians.
All right. That is, this is just the latest. So that is kind of the background on a strike that many, when it was first reported, it was reported that the United States had struck Syrian targets. However, it was the Israelis, and they're not striking Syrian targets. They're striking Iranian targets. right? And so in the midst of this cauldron is a deeper, more dangerous war, and that is the war that Iran has been, in my opinion, preparing for decades now. They prepared southern Lebanon with money and weapons, and now they're trying to tighten the noose on Israel. Okay, so this is the President of the United States, and just one more little piece of audio as we continue kind of talking about Syria.
Near Damascus, and it will be met, and it will be met forcefully.
This was Monday night.
We're going to make a decision tonight or very shortly thereafter.
President Trump canceled his trip to a summit in South America in order to oversee the American response in Syria. He spoke to British Prime Minister Theresa May by phone. And according to the White House, both leaders agreed the use of chemical weapons must not continue, a sentiment Congress must decide how to deal with.
At the end of the day, you've got to have a military response that destroys Assad's capability to do it yet again.
But the Syrian government continues to deny,
obviously, Lindsey Graham,
any involvement. And regarding possible U.S. military strikes, a senior Syrian minister says they aren't afraid.
We won't be afraid, and we will never be afraid.
Syria and the Russians who support the Assad regime deny there was even a chemical weapons attack in the first place, but have invited the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons to send in a fact-finding team. This, as the United Nations Security Council continues to debate how to respond to what happened over the weekend.
History will record this as the moment when the Security Council either discharged its duty or demonstrated its utter and complete failure to protect the people of Syria.
In Washington, I'm Omar Jimenez.
There you have it. See, all right. So we're going to take a break, and we'll get Gunnar on, and but we'll continue our little bit of our Syrian education here on All Marine Radio. Again, I'm I don't know how a war between Iran and Israel is avoided, and I would say this: if I was going to give Benjamin Netanyahu any advice, you can initiate it now on your terms, because if you wait and allow the Syrians to allow the Iranians to use Syria to build up combat power that will be certainly used against Israel at a later date, you make the problem much, much more difficult for yourself. And the Israelis know that. So we will take a break. We'll get Mike Musselman on, and we'll see what he's got going in his life here on a Thursday. But a little bit of a bit of a primer on the Civil War, the Cold War, and the Holy War that goes on simultaneously in Syria. Why do you find it so confusing? Because you're trying to understand a six-sided war, okay? And the other problem is that in the Sunni opposition to Assad, there are elements of Al Qaeda, there are elements of ISIS, and that has compounded our ability to find a suitable partner to create some form of alternative in Syria. To me, it's almost a no-brainer if you look at eastern Syria, right, that the United States, after its ejection of the Islamic State, can control that indefinitely. It is kind of the demarcation line between the Russians and the Americans. We smoked a lot of Russian proxies in that general area. Okay, the United States shouldn't leave, and it's in the United States' interest that both Iraq become a federal republic with provinces delineated between the Kurds, the Shiites, and the Sunnis, and it is in America's interest that Syria, I'm not sure, be delineated the same, because it would be Kurd, Sunni, and Alawite. But the thing that that does is it negates Iranian influence in the region. Because all the places that Iran is setting up are Sunni places. They're dominated by Sunni. So it makes no sense. But Sunnis can't seem to get their act together. So we will take a break. We'll get the Gunner on. More of All Marine Radio coming up next.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.